Well, here we go again. Another airline pulls out of serving the smaller airports in our region. In this case, the Alaska-based Penn Air has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, abruptly ending service to Klamath Falls, North Bend, Redding, and the Humboldt County Airport. Penn Air is still flying to Crescent City because the government is forcing it to. This leaves Klamath Falls with no commercial airline service, and Crescent City may not be far behind. Our guests this morning to talk about this situation are John Barcelo, who is a manager of the Klamath Falls Airport. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And his counterpart in Crescent City is joining us. Matthew Leitner is on the line. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning, John. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, guys, for being with us this morning. So Penn Air has been flying to the region for 18 months, give or take a bit. What do you know about their bankruptcy? And was this just a classic case of a small airline being overextended?
That would be my take. This is John Barcelo. Yeah, that would be my take. They actually started here October 5th of last year.
Oh, okay. And Matthew, anything to add to that? Just overextension on Penn Air's part?
Yeah, that's from what I can discern the primary reason. And then, of course, the 1,500-hour rule for pilots kind of exacerbated the situation as they were growing. They just weren't able to keep up, from what we can tell, with the pilot shortage and maintenance requirements and things of that nature. So I believe that's what caused it.
And Matthew, Penn Air, as I understand it, is still being forced by the federal government to serve Crescent City through the EAS program. The essential air service, how long can that last?
Until a suitable replacement is found. So like you said, the U.S. Department of Transportation has issued a hold-in order for Penn Air, even though they said their wish was to vacate this market within 90 days. Since we're an essential air service market, they're unable to do so until a replacement carrier is found and approved by the board and then approved by the Department of Transportation. So their term here at this juncture is indefinite. And they have said that they will continue to serve our market per the hold-in order until we do find that replacement carrier. So, you know, a lot is left to be determined. The DOT issued a request for proposals to all the carriers in the nation, and we've been doing our utmost to get as many proposals as we can so we have the best array from which to choose. And that RFP deadline is September 12, 2017. So subsequent to that, there will be a public comment period. And then a carrier will be chosen, and Penn Air will be able to go.
Now, my understanding is for the EAS, the Essential Air Service, an air carrier actually receives a subsidy from the federal government to keep service going. Is that right?
That is correct. So we just chose Penn Air a few months ago, and then that contract was going to be from October 2017 to October 2019. For their first year, the subsidy was $3.244 million, and then the second year was $3.392 million, and it's a pay-for-performance contract. So if Penn Air doesn't fly, they don't receive the subsidy. And it's also important to note that the airport doesn't receive that money and then, you know, meets it out. It actually goes to the carrier. So that's kind of outside our purview, so to speak.
So, John Barcelo, Klamath Falls right now with Penn Air's bankruptcy has no air service because you don't have EAS status. Why not?
Well, we've never had the need in the past, and the EAS program back, I think, around 2011, maybe a little bit sooner than that, the federal government basically closed off essential air service to any new entrants. So the airport prior to this has had air service since 1947. There was a short hiatus in 2014, but there was never a need to be a part of the essential air service program at that point in time.
So it gets back to Matthew Leitner. You mentioned that requests for service are out there right now. So this isn't really the responsibility of each individual airport. The government steps in and says, hey, you know, we have these areas that need service, and they're the ones that go out and ask the carriers to bid on service?
Correct. So they issue the RFP with several stipulations. You know, for instance, if you have this size airplane, you'll need to serve the market with this frequency, et cetera. And then the carrier puts forth a subsidy requirement, and then that's vetted by the DOT. But the community and the airport have a big role to play as well, because what we need to do is accurately convey the community and the region's wishes when it comes to air service. So that means, you know, evaluating hubs, the schedule, the integration with major carriers, you know, things of that nature. So really, you know, the DOT and the airport authority, airport management, work very closely together to ensure the best possible outcome with respect to the proposals.
So, John Barcelo, I understand that the TSA is already transferring resources from Klamath Falls over to Medford. How easy will it be for them to come back if you are able to get another carrier in there?
Well, I'm in dialogue with the TSA at this point in time. recent conversations is they can stay for, in my understanding, is 90 days. And they will do whatever they can to help us out. That's what they specifically told me. And we appreciate that very much for them to being willing and able to do that. So as far as if we can find another carrier as quickly as possible, which we are working on diligently right now, then they'll come back and service us here, and that's what their plan is. And that's what our hope is as well.
So I'm going to throw this question out to both of you, and you can both jump in on this. What process do you go through as a local airport, to assist the government in attracting a carrier? What steps do you guys take?
Well, this is John Barcelo. There are several different ways to attract a carrier. Typically, carriers, as Matthew has pointed out multiple times earlier in the conversation, that the pilot shortage, there's also airframe, the airlines are constricting or shrinking as far as the number of airplanes that they're using. They're not using the smaller planes, they're using the larger planes. So the airlines typically ask for incentives, and so we're reaching out to the business communities to ask for support in bringing forward a package of information to the carriers, to potential carriers, that might serve our market. So incentives, like financial incentives, typically, just like you have with the EAS program, since we don't have the federal government for Klamath Falls at the Crater Lake Klamath Regional Airport, it becomes essential that we get the business community behind whatever it is we're trying to accomplish.
So does a carrier, an air carrier, come in and say, we want to be guaranteed a certain level of revenue?
They do. They do that on a regular basis. And that's typically how the EAS program works, is that the federal government has stepped in for those communities that qualified for EAS, said, we will provide that revenue guarantee. And that's how they're able to do that. But when you don't have EAS, that becomes then the community's responsibility to come up with the flyers as well as, you know, the business activity as well as the revenue guarantee.
I think, Matthew, yeah, you were going to jump in there?
Yeah, so with regard to EAS, the way the bids are structured, the design is for a 5% profit margin with the carrier, but we try to enhance that and we try to make it as guaranteed as we can. So like John said, you know, we put forth marketing proposals that, you know, accurately reflect the potential of the region and the community, and then we proffer that to the carriers and they respond accordingly. And again, we're trying to maximize the responses from suitable carriers for this market. And with regard to Essential Air Service, if I may, you know, I go around quite a bit and I hear words to the effect of, oh, that infernal EAS, it's the most egregious waste of my taxpayer dollars. And EAS is largely funded by external sources such as foreign overflight fees. So the example I often cite is there's an Air Canada flight that goes from Havana, Cuba to Toronto, Ontario, three times every day. And they peel a few bucks off that flight, and they put that into the Airport and Airway Trust Fund, and that's what pays for EAS. So that money comes into Crescent City, it multiplies, it benefits our community exponentially, you know, not only for the economic aspect, but just having that line to the outside world is imperative. You know, I mean, if somebody is evaluating Crescent City in terms of starting a business or, you know, opening a plant or whatever, commercial air service is critical. You know, and John pointed out the trend that, you know, larger air carriers are going larger, and a lot of these smaller communities are suffering as a result. So, you know, we're fighting as hard as we can on behalf of Crescent City to ensure that we have that lifeline.
Now, both of you guys have mentioned a couple of times this morning the pilot shortage that is affecting especially the smaller air carriers. What's going on there?
Well, I think as Matthew pointed out, the 1,500-hour rule the FAA imposed a couple of years ago has made a major impact. I think The other issue is that the airlines are recognizing the need to pay pilots more, which, of course, obviously increase their operating costs. An average, I think, cost, and Matthew, please correct me, or if you have additional or different information, I think the cost to for a pilot to get his pilot's commercials rated pilot's license is about $150,000 worth of time and effort, and the average salary of a new pilot coming in is anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 a year, depending on which carrier you go to. For example, Pan Air lost almost a third of their pilots in the month of March to the larger carriers. And Horizon and Alaska, I think, just canceled over 300 flights during the month of August because of pilot shortage.
Yeah, I'd heard that the pilot shortage was actually really eating into Horizon's profits.
Right, and that's because they have to pay the pilots more in order to keep them.
The catalyst for that 1,500-hour rule was there was, I believe it was Colgan Airways in New York State back in, if I'm not mistaken, 2009, because before they just required a commercial pilot's license for a first officer, so you could have 250 hours total time and be a first officer for a regional. And the typical career trajectory back then was, you know, they would do flight instruction, they would do cargo, whatever. They would become a first officer, a co-pilot with a regional carrier, become a captain, build up the time, and then go to the nationals or the majors. That's no longer the case. Now to fly for what the FAA calls a Part 121 carrier, like Pan Air or Horizon or SkyWest or what have you, they have to have 1,500 hours as a co-pilot. So, you know, like John said, the cost associated with gaining that experience is huge. And then, consequently, the airline has to compensate them accordingly. So, you know, that's kind of what we're faced with right now. So, you know, like Crescent City, we used to be a 30-seat niche market. We were served by an EMB 120 Brasilia. Then Pan Air had a similar platform with the Saab 340. And now the carriers are going either 9-seat or 50-seat. And that kind of leaves us in that uncomfortable middle, so to speak. And that's what we're contending with.
And so those 9-seat planes are serving even smaller airports?
Correct. Boutique Air is a large 9-seat Pilatus operator, and they've taken quite a few EAS markets. Here in California, I believe they're in Merced and Visalia. And then you look elsewhere, they're in Pendleton, Oregon. So, you know, they're kind of, closing that gap, so to speak, and serving those markets. Mm-hmm. And one benefit that comes with 9-seat airplanes is frequency. You know, it's easy to justify greater frequency with a 9-seat airplane than it is with a 50 or a 30-seat airplane.
So is there a possibility that you'd be looking at one of those smaller carriers, either for Crescent City or for Klamath Falls?
Go ahead, Matthew.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, I mean, and again, we need to evaluate the benefits associated with that. But, you know, we'll certainly entertain any proposal we get. And vet it and just see, you know, how well it would serve our market.
John, let's get back to you. Have you quantified the economic impact that a commercial airline service has on, say, Klamath Falls?
Sure. The one big number that jumps out at us quite frequently, and one of the things we were pushing for pretty heavily, is the 10,000 passengers. The FAA provides, as Matthew indicated, airport improvement dollars or AIP dollars for airports our size. And so typically an airport that has less than 10,000 in-plane passengers getting onto the airplanes, they only give you for less than 10,000, it's $150,000 of what they call entitlement or capital improvement dollars. If you reach 10,000 in-planement number, then that number jumps from 150,000 to a million. So there's an $850,000 incentive for the airports to go after that type of employment activity. A boutique or a Great Lakes or Lime or other smaller carriers, as you mentioned, the 9-seaters, is very, very difficult to reach that 10,000 employment with those types of carriers. Though, however, they do provide a service to the community, and so obviously, for the Crater Lake Klamath Regional Airport, we're going after and trying to find a replacement carrier. As we mentioned, there are a lot of challenges there. If we're unsuccessful, then we will be looking at other options like We have a FBO, Century Aviation, that, like Boutique, might provide something like that.
And Matthew, are you seeing similar numbers for Crescent City in terms of economic impact?
Yeah, we are. You know, I before I was in Crescent City, I was in Jamestown, North Dakota, and the state of North Dakota did a survey, and they determined that for every dollar of EAS subsidy, there's $4 of aggregate economic impact. So, you know, you do the math on Crescent City, and the effect is huge. You know, and again, at the risk of being redundant, we've got to have commercial air service. It's just that imperative, you know, for our economic livelihood and health.
And I'd like to add as well that the business community here in town, as well as the tourist activities for Crater Lake, is critical to the continued, you know, development and growth of the Klamath Falls Basin.
And you guys are looking at a fall deadline for a new carrier?
We're seeking new carriers as quickly as possible.
Okay, Matthew.
For Crescent's.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, for Crescent City, you know, we're expecting proposals by September 12th, and like I said, there'll be a public comment period, and then the board has to approve or select a proposal, and then the DOT has to approve that. So, you know, we'll expedite the transition to the best of our ability, but it may be a few months before we have another carrier, potentially into January, February.
Okay, our guests this morning have been John Barcelo, who's the manager of the Klamath Falls Airport, his counterpart in Crescent City. Matthew Leitner, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck in getting air service returning to your communities.